Marilyn Monroe once said, "I've been on a calendar, but never on time." And George Orwell said that whoever controls the past controls the future, and whoever controls the present controls the past. I think Orwell was hitting on something here, that the past and the future, as well as the present for that matter, are open for grabs, so to speak. And I think this is something that history teaches us, that there's no fixed law of nature which says things have to go in a certain direction, that things don't have to evolve in a certain way. We're not simply victims or passive observers riding along on this train from the beginning of time to the end. We are literally creating the journey, and we have more power to do so. And what I'm explaining and what I've tried to explain to you in this whole program is that the way we do it is through ego control, which has to do with going back in time to where there was more possibilities, or going forward in time to where there's less possibilities. Going forward in time is mastery. Going backward in time is letting go. And so these are the simple things, the simple basic tools that you can now develop in order to determine who you are and what you think you are and how those things could be changed. So let's just review this for a little bit as we come to the close of the program. We've looked at several forms of time travel. We've looked at physical forms of time travel. And I even suggested in the beginning of the program, according to Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, that our memories might work better if we could recall the future as well as we do the past. And the whole idea where this makes sense to us is to realize that the place where future, past, and present all kind of commingle, and we can't decide which is which, is a subspace-time realm, the realm of the great river of time in which we all are moving or floating. And so, to me, this is a very important part, is to realize that time is not just something which has been invented by scientists to deal with the objective world, but it's something which is deeply ingrained in our spiritual sense of who and what we think we are. And in the Gita, we talked about something called action. And in talking about action, there was an idea known as the action without action, actionless action. The difference is very subtle. Normal action can be done to do great good or evil, since it's always accompanied by ego self. It's always concerned with the fruits of the action. In this case, the fruit refers to the transformation from possibility to probability. In other words, when we're dealing with action as we commonly understand it, we're dealing in the land of probability, we're dealing in the land of materiality, we're dealing in the land of space and time and matter. Actionless action, on the other hand, is that other point, that defocused point, in which we're at the level of possibilities, where we're going, in a sense, back in time to where there are more grapes to pick. As we went further into the section on spirituality, we began to look at the timeless, spaceless realm, and we compared ordinary scientific space and time with the spiritual or sacred space and time. I may have mentioned to you that we usually think of the ordinary physical space and time as depicted by graphs that we draw, in which a line represents space and another line could represent time, whereas in the sacred, we think of cycles in which things are moving in a circular way. And then I said to you, this is a hint that something is coming in the new general relativity theory, which arose at the turn of the 20th century chiefly by Albert Einstein, in which we could see that time could also be seen as going in a circle and not necessarily just following a straight line. So we then explored in the next session, we began to explore how we could take time travel seriously, how Einstein's theories predict how time travel could occur. And we went on a kind of a journey into the world of time machines and how they might work. And we also explored how we could think about space and time. And I told you a little bit about Ramana Maharshi and how he was able to free himself from the sense of his ego. This led us into the realization that in modern physics, Time travel is not something which is forbidden. In fact, it may be compulsory, and it may be something that must be included in our understanding of the physical world. And this led to, well, if that's the case and one can time travel, what happens if you go back in time to when you were a little boy and you kill yourself or you kill your parents or something like that before they had you? How could you do that? The so-called paradoxes of time travel. And we explained that the way out of the paradoxes seems to be the existence of parallel worlds, parallel realities. This was a very important consideration because not only does parallel realities arise according to relativity theory, it also turns out that parallel realities arise according to quantum physics. So we can get a parallel reality in relativity theory, we can get a parallel reality in quantum physics. So they both indicate that we have these things, and if we do have these things, then we have the possibility of time travel, because if you go back in time and do something which violates the conditions of which must have occurred in order for you to have appeared at all, then you've gone into a parallel world. So it's very important to realize that if we allow parallel world thinking into our mixture of things, we free ourselves to think about time travel in a new light. In one of the following sessions that came after that, we talked about the key issue, the difference between possibility, probability, and actuality. And we took a good look at what possibility waves are and explained how they can be positive and negative and they can interfere with each other. And then I told you about the process we call squaring, in which a possibility wave is multiplied by itself and that produces a probability curve, we called it. And probability curves are the things that we basically live our lives by. And I gave you an example of the probability curve of awakening each day at the same time. Then we went further and we talked about how probabilities come about through the squaring process, and the movement forward in time is a dance between possibility and probability, where things are more possible, there's a lot more possibilities, then something happens, and then they become possible again, but less possible, and then something happens. So in other words, every time something happens, every time there is a constellation, every time there's a focus, a focal point arising, we have changed a possibility into a probability. We next looked at the notion of the ego and its relationship, the ego self, in terms of the structure which arises. So when the ego forms, possibilities are being changed into probabilities. So the ego is an assessing form. It wants probabilities because it wants to deal with what it can do in order to assure the survival of. And that's what the ego does. It's what can it do to ensure the survival of. That's its main function. So it's the formation, it's the individuality which forms in order that a life form can evolve, in order for a material reality to exist as an out there, separate from an in here. The whole key to time travel is the dissolution of these boundaries, the movement of these boundaries. As we move these boundaries so that we're going into more and more possibilities, we're going backwards in time as we're moving the boundaries into the state where we're going into less and less possibilities, we're going forward in time. So as things become more and more probable, we're going forward in time. As things become less and less probable, we're actually going backward in time. This is the direction of the way the conscious mind works. A mechanical device works the opposite way. A mechanical device is always attempting to go into the realm of more and more probable, which means less and less ordered. So as things become more and more probable, it's like socks in a drawer. You first put your socks in the drawer and you have them all lined up. But as every day you go into your drawer to pull out a pair of socks, when you go into your drawer the next day, it's more disordered. So the natural mechanical order of things is to go into more and more disorder. That's called entropy production. But what we do, what mind does, is to do the opposite. It controls, it attempts to alter, it attempts to reduce the entropy rather than allow it to increase. And this is where the universe of order can even arise.